You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered, listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Don Guerra.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the WFHB local news for Wednesday, January 29, 2020.
In today's feature report, WFHB correspondent Katrine Bruner provides the history of PCBs in Monroe County. Also coming up in the next half hour, Artbeat, speaking with area artists and advocates about their work and medium. But first, your local headlines.
Planning Director Kevin Tolity proposed a tax abatement for Richland senior citizen housing to the Ellettsville Town Council. He said tax abatement would finance an expansion through tax credits. Tolity spoke about tax exemption versus tax abatement during the January 27th meeting.
We're asking for a tax abatement, which would do two things. One, it would essentially treat properties that was tax exempt to begin with. And two, it would show that the town was offering, I don't have the number right in front of me, but around $750,000 in tax benefits. Now, granted, they never would have paid these taxes anyway, because had they developed normally, it would have been tax exempt. So it looks like a lot. In reality, it's not. It looks like we're offering a lot, the town is, but it wouldn't, if they don't have this, then it would have developed tax exempt and we would have gotten nothing anyway.
Council member William Ellis clarified Richland would receive 100% abatement for 10 years. National Center for Housing Management associate Carson Hayes said to receive tax credits, properties must convert to a taxable property.
So what's going to happen is the Richland Board as a nonprofit will be the general partner of a taxable entity. And it's a 15-year compliance, but you can only do your tax exemption for 10 years, then we would reapply for the other five. Then at the end of 15, it'll revert back into being a nonprofit. So we're simply doing this only to be able to get the tax credits, and we've got 100% rental assistance on all the projects we've got now, because those will all be rehabbed. And then on the new project of 50 units, there's going to be 25% rental assistance, but then we're also going to have some of the moderate income that right now ours are set at 50% of median is our income limit, and we'll be able to go up to 60% of median income with that.
Hayes said resident eligibility standards will broaden. He said a strong demand of senior living is seen throughout the area. Council members unanimously passed the resolution.
Hoosier Energy plans to close a Sullivan County power plant due to a switch to more environmentally sustainable sources of energy. WFHB correspondent Alex Dederer reports on what the future holds for Hoosier Energy and surrounding counties.
Hoosier Energy announced last Tuesday their plans to close the Merrim Generating Station in Sullivan County in 2023, affecting nearly 200 utility workers. Founded in 1949, Hoosier Energy is a nonprofit generation and transmission cooperative. It serves 18 member electric cooperatives in central and southern Indiana, as well as southeastern Illinois. The cooperative's mission is to provide members with assured, reliable, and competitively priced energy and services in a safe and environmentally acceptable manner. According to Indiana Public Media, Hoosier spokesperson Greg Sider said the decision is, in large part, a cost savings move. The cooperative plans to idle the Sullivan County 1,070-megawatt coal-fired plant as part of a transition to other energy sources. These include less expensive sources such as wind, solar, natural gas, and storage. According to a Hoosier Energy press release, the cooperative said closing the plant is part of a long-range resource plan designed to provide its 18-member power cooperatives with, quote, reliable, affordable, and environmentally sustainable energy, while saving members in an estimated $700 million over the next two decades. This plan is estimated to cut the cooperative's carbon footprint by nearly 80%. Headquartered in Bloomington, the cooperative delivers power through a nearly 1,700-mile transmission network, reaching 650,000 consumers. The cooperative's members serve more than 300,000 homes, farms, and businesses. The Merrim Generating Station services several thousand residents in Monroe and Greene counties. Hoosier Energy gave their announcement a day after Hyador Energy Company, located in Terre Haute, said that coal production has been retired at Carlisle Mine in Sullivan County, affecting 90 full-time employees. According to the Tribune Star, Hoosier President and CEO states, quote, "We sincerely value our dedicated employees and will help those impacted during this transition by working with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers to offer assistance such as retraining, reassignment, and professional outplace, along with retirement options," end quote. For WFHB, I'm Alex Dieterer.
A new bill introduced in the Indiana House of Representatives would allow undocumented immigrants to lawfully drive in the state of Indiana. According to a report from WTHR 13, House Bill 1083 was authored by Democrats Chris Campbell and Earl Harris. The bill allows the state to issue driving cards and learner's permits to residents of Indiana even if they, quote, cannot provide proof of identity and lawful status in the United States, unquote. The driving cards would not be allowed as federal identification and, as such, would not be interchangeable with driver's licenses. They would still be subject to revocation or suspension in the case of various traffic violations. The Committee on Roads and Transportation heard the bill earlier this month. If passed, the bill would go into effect this July.
A 4-year-old boy died after an accidental shooting in Bloomington last week. Tripp Shaw passed away on Thursday morning after sustaining serious head injuries. Injuries transpired from a discharged bullet from his father's gun. The son and father were wrestling around on Sunday when the father's concealed Glock fell from his pants and accidentally discarded a bullet. The bullet stuck both father and son. However, the father's injuries were not serious. The son was taken to Riley's Children's Hospital for care. The weapon was sent away to be tested for defects. The Monroe County Sheriff's Office has an open case for the accident, and felony criminal recklessness charges could potentially be filed as a result of the shooting. According to Indiana Code, criminal recklessness committed while armed with a deadly weapon is a level 6 felony.
A Republican state senator drafted a bill to monitor animal feeding operations in Indiana. The bill was introduced earlier this month and was referred to the Committee on Environmental Affairs. WFHB's Sydney Foreman has more about the future of the bill.
Republican Senator Rick Niemeyer authored Senate Bill 248 for annual inspections of concentrated animal feeding operations, or CAFOs. This bill would require state-mandated on-site annual inspections by the Indiana Environmental Management Agency. Inspections would be performed in large, medium, and small CAFO facilities. The Senate bill defines a large CAFO as, quote, "at which more than 1,000 herd of beef cattle, 700 dairy cows, 2,500 swine weighing more than 55 pounds, or 125,000 broiler chickens are confined on site for more than 45 days during 1 year," end quote. A small CAFO is defined as, quote, "at which fewer animals are confined than at a medium CAFO, but which has been determined to be a significant contributor of pollutants to water of the United States," end quote. A medium CAFO falls in between the two. CAFOs confine large amounts of animals without vegetation, producing an overwhelming amount of waste. The Sierra Club says, quote, "the amount of urine and feces produced by the smallest CAFO is equivalent to the quantity of urine and feces produced by 16,000 humans," end quote. The waste contains chemicals, cleaning products, heavy metals, hormones, and much more, which finds its way into our waterways. This concentrated amount of contaminated waste can cause toxic reactions in humans. The contaminants also affect freshwater, wildlife health, and marine ecosystems. Therefore, contaminants build up around the meat you eat, the water you drink, and the seafood you crave. The proposed yearly inspections could possibly encourage cleaner food production from CAFOs. For WFHB, I'm Sydney Foreman.
The Bloomington Utilities Service Board approved Greeley and Hanson-Dillman Road expansion. Assistant Director Brad Schrader proposed the request at the January 27th meeting. He spoke about plant electrical systems.
And one of the things we did with the electrical systems was early on, an evaluation was done of all our electrical systems at the plant, and they were ranked as far as an order of which needed to be replaced based on age and condition. And then when we went into this project, since it would be split into two pieces, we worked from that list, plus we only updated those electrical systems which would be impacted by other work in the project. So a design change came out through the project where we had to now get into a system we hadn't planned on getting into, and it was actually the oldest system, electrical system, the worst ranked in there. So we decided, you know, now is our opportunity to completely upgrade that system.
Schrader said the upgrade amount is $50,000, and the next Utilities Service Board meeting will be February 3rd.
In 2005, the United Nations General Assembly designated January 27th as a day to recognize the victims of the Holocaust. January 27th marked the anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz-Birkenau as International Holocaust Remembrance Day. On this annual day of commemoration, the UN urges every member nation to honor the 6 million Jewish victims of the Holocaust and millions of other victims of Nazism and to develop educational programs to help prevent future genocides. International Holocaust Remembrance Day was trending this week on social media using the hashtag #WeRemember. Advocacy group Our Living Legacy said, quote, "The Holocaust, which established the standard for absolute evil, is the universal heritage of all civilized people," end quote. CBS reporter Edward R. Murrow reported from Europe during the war. He was the first reporter on the scene after the liberation of the Buchenwald concentration camp. In light of International Holocaust Remembrance Day, we have an excerpt from the historic Edward R. Murrow broadcast.
"Permit me to tell you what you would have seen and heard had you been with me on Thursday. It will not be pleasant listening. If you're at lunch, or if you have no appetite to hear what Germans have done, now is a good time to switch off the radio. For I propose to tell you of Buchenwald. It is on a small hill about 4 miles outside Weimar, and it was one of the largest concentration camps in Germany, and it was built to last. As we approached it, we saw about 100 men in civilian clothes, with rifles, advancing in open order across the field. There were a few shots. We stopped to inquire. We're told that some of the prisoners had a couple of SS men cornered in there. We drove on, reached the main gate. The prisoners crowded up behind the wire. We entered."
That was Edward R. Murrow's broadcast of the liberation of Buchenwald. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Don Guerra.
And I'm Scott Weddle. WFHB Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Support also comes from Cardinal Spirits Distillery, located on the B Line. Cardinal Spirits has opened a new kitchen featuring local seasonal food made from scratch to complement their craft cocktails. Dinner available Tuesday through Saturday at Cardinal Spirits, 922 South Morton Street.
In today's feature, Katrine Bruner talks to a former employee of the Monroe County Health Department about the history of PCBs in the area. Since at least the 1950s, PCBs have been a problem here in Monroe County, and today the presence of PCBs means there are still three EPA toxic waste sites in Monroe County. WFHB junior correspondent Katrine Bruner explains the history and what the future holds for PCBs in Monroe County.
the state of Indiana has a bad reputation for pollution. It may lead some to wonder why. One of the largest reasons came from the man-made material called PCB, short for polychlorinated biphenyl. PCBs are made from 209 individual chlorinated compounds called congeners. They range from light oily fluids to heavy oils, greases, and waxes. The use of PCBs began in the 1930s for electrical equipment, plasticizers and paints, carbonless copy paper, inks and dyes in newsprint, and other industrial materials. In Indiana, the Bloomington-Westinghouse Electric Corporation plant produced capacitors which had PCB-laced oil in electric devices. The company would dispose of the capacitors in area landfills and dumps. After more than 40 years of industrial use, evidence was found that PCBs were dangerous to the environment and had the potential to cause harmful health effects not only to the environment but also to humans. Once the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency discovered the contamination issue that was going on, a debate began on what to do to ensure the public's safety from these chemicals. The Westinghouse Electric Corporation was found to have contaminated multiple areas in Monroe County with PCBs by dumping their products into the ground. In 1979, the EPA banned PCBs. This put a halt to manufacturers in the United States, which were forced to stop producing the material immediately. In 1983, the EPA ordered Westinghouse to begin cleanup on their area. Starting that same year, three sites appeared on the EPA's national priority list. These sites were the Bennett Stone Quarry, Lemon Lane Landfill, and Neal's Landfill. Former employee of both the Westinghouse Electric Company and Monroe County Health Department, Dennis Williamson, has one of the most unique perspectives on this issue. He began learning about PCBs during high school and college and then went on to work for Westinghouse for a couple of years. Williamson talks about the PCB history for Westinghouse, which began in 1956, and what happened when they learned about PCBs, saying, quote, "They had to catch up on what was going on with the federal laws, so it took them a while to accept that it was their responsibility to clean up everything," end quote. As for the Monroe County Health Department's role in the remediation process of PCBs at that time, Williamson, former employee for the department for 28 years, explains what all they had to do, including initiating meetings and site visiting with the EPA and the state. He says they were, quote, "making sure things were done safely and in good fashion," end quote. Williamson also shared his thoughts on the update of PCBs in Monroe County and where they are now with this issue.
Well, I think eventually we'll get there. There's some what we call trigger points in the settlement that Westinghouse has to meet in order to treat water. They've got to make sure fish are clean and the water and sediment is clean. So once there is that at a particular site, EPA will declare it a clean site. So, and I say we're getting there, but I think we're 30 to 40 years away, not another couple of generations away from reaching that point. So.
As for the community, Williamson expresses why he believes that this is an important issue to know about, saying that it is good to learn about the history of our community and how communities are coming together and working together in the hope that we will reach a point where we are safe again. He further says, quote, "it's good from a historical standpoint to know about these things," end quote. Bloomington High School South biology and AP environmental science teacher Amanda Figola spoke on behalf of this issue as well. She explained specifically why the issue of PCBs and environmental quality is important to teach to students. Figola teaches about PCBs while students are studying the water health of Clear Creek, which is directly across the school. After recording data, students will then assess and look at additional biological water qualities. The data will eventually be placed into the Hoosier River Watch, a state-sponsored water quality monitoring database. Figola explained the reactions that most students have after learning about such pollution in our county, saying that they are usually surprised by these stories because they don't often see these things publicized. She also said, quote, "they are usually surprised about the fact that we're still monitoring and getting PCBs out of our water systems," end quote. She further explained why pollution in Indiana is such an important subject to teach, saying, quote, "Indiana is not an environmental poster child in the United States," end quote. She said that, quote, "learning about the history of PCBs in Bloomington, Indiana gives kids a perspective because it's different from what they might experience from day to day, and it lets us learn from the mistakes made in the past," end quote. For WFHB, I'm Katrine Bruner.
Coming up next is Art Beat with Dr. Felice Cicek.
Welcome to Art Beat with Dr. Felice Cicek at WFHB. My guest today is Isabel Perry. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You are directing the new playwright project.
Yes.
And it's a musical.
Yes, I'm directing The Enlightenment of Percival von Schmutz at Bloomington Playwrights Project.
And is that an adaptation?
It's a new musical. It's been workshopped over the last 8 years or so, but it's completely new, and you can only get this production and this version at Bloomington Playwrights Project.
Once in a lifetime experience.
Yes.
So you only have new plays at the BPP?
Yes, Bloomington Playwrights Project is the only theater in Indiana that's solely dedicated to the development of new work and producing new plays by playwrights.
Yeah, I was listening to some of the conversation that you and the others,
Ryan,
the other people had here. And it seems like a very, very intriguing play that you are springing off of Monty Python, among other movies or plays. So can you tell me a bit more about the inspiration behind the play?
Yeah, so the play takes place during the Dark Ages, during the time of the Black Plague and several other plagues.
And then you make that funny?
Yeah, and for some reason it's very funny, but it's very Monty Python humor and I think leaning into the absurd, and you have this bright-eyed optimist who is seeking meaning in everything, but he's in this world of just complete and utter horrible circumstances, and yet he seems to find meaning and joy in, I mean, his first line is, "Ah, what a glorious day it is in Manureshire," and he lives in this town called Manureshire that, as you guessed, is just covered in manure. And so Monty Python, there we have a couple of allusions to jokes that they do with the Black Knight, if you're into the Holy Grail, and some coconuts do make an appearance. But I think in general, it's the idea of the crude humor that they use that is paired with the sacred.
So what was the impetus for this play? What's significant for you?
The impetus of this play, I mentioned before, the writers thought it would be hilarious to subvert expectations and create a musical where in the opening number, everyone dies, which isn't quite what happened in this musical, but I think this idea of subverting expectations definitely continues, and there's the threat of that throughout the musical, where we have nuns and their idea of being holy and appreciating God and worshiping is very different than I think what a typical expectation is. And you see these actors go through very sacred rituals, and then all followed pretty immediately by some very crude staging. So I think in that sense, there's definitely that pairing of or the dichotomy, I think, in that way. Part of the fun of working on this process was that we have 7 actors who I think play, I want to say, over 20 characters. I mean, it's funny, at curtain call every night when all 7 actors come out and take their bow, people can't believe that that's all there is. You get this bustling town energy. I think the opening number sort of feels like a twisted opening to Beauty and the Beast, where in Beauty and the Beast, everyone is, it's very clean. It's this beautiful French countryside, and they're all greeting Belle. Versus in this production, we have our protagonist, Percival von Schmutz, who wakes up instead to a bunch of poop diggers who are spitting in his face and coughing on him.
When is the play opening, and what else would you like our listeners to know about it?
Yeah, so the play opened this weekend, January 24th, and it will be running through February 8th. Performances are Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. It's a hilarious show. It's very uplifting. I think it takes place in a hard time, but I think it shows that light can be found in even the darkest moments. And I think it's a message we all need right now.
So even though it's medieval times, or because it's medieval times, there are some references to our current day situation?
Definitely references to our current day situation. And I think some more overt nods than others.
So if you feel frustrated with the current events, come on down to Bloomington Playwright Project and get ready to laugh and think and take the play with you.
Yes.
Thank you, Isabel.
Thank you so much.
You have been listening to Artbeat with Dr. Felice Cicek on WFHB.
ArtBeat is produced in partnership with the Arts Alliance of Greater Bloomington. Tune in on Tuesdays on WFHB after 7:50 in the morning and again during the daily local news at 5 p.m. Or you can listen online at wfhb.org.
You've been listening to the WFHB local news. Today's headlines were written by Andrew McKeeran, Cade Young, Alex Ditterer, and Sydney Foreman, in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Katrine Bruner. ArtBeat is produced by Dr. Feliz Chichek.
Engineers today are Cade Young and Dan Weathered. Our theme music provided by Ben Lumsdaine, Danny Graff, and Scott Schmadeke. Our executive producer is Cade Young. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent local news program.
And you can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org.
Stay tuned for Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio. Hereabouts is produced in partnership with the Asian Cultural Center on the campus of Indiana University, Bloomington. That's Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio, coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a daily local news volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcast of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.